I want to take you back to Revelation 13 and 14 today for a lot of different reasons. And the reasons are because there are a lot of distractions today to devotion. And I want you to see that that was true many, many years ago when John wrote and recognized the oppression of the government in Rome that Christians were facing back so many years ago. Go ahead and follow along in Revelation 13, 1 through 8, and we'll go back and dissect some of that and get into chapter 14, 1 through 5. And if you listen really, 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 really well, we'll get through this really quick. I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast, or a monster, rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and 10 horns, and on his horns 10 crowns, and on his head a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. The dragon gave him power over his throne and great authority. And I saw in one of his heads as it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshiped the dragon who gave authority to the beast, and they worshiped the beast, saying, "Who is like the beast? Who is able to make war with him?" And he was given a mouth, speaking great things and blasphemies. And he was given authority to continue for 42 months, 3.5 years. Then he opened his mouth in his blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. It was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And authority was given him over every tribe, tongue, and nation. All who dwell on the earth will worship him, whose names have not been written in the book of life, slain from the foundation of the world. I want you to look with me at maybe a couple of introductory thoughts about this and the context which says this morning. For John and his immediate audience, it was Rome and the Roman government who was oppressing the Christian community. Now watch what these beasts or these monsters were trying to do. Watch this closely. They were trying to deflect their worship from the God whom they could not see tangibly to the authorities, the Roman government, who they could see. Now go back and think about that for a minute. This is what the beasts or the monsters were trying to do. And it hasn't changed in 20 centuries. There are still beasts and monsters who are out there who are trying to deflect our worship from the holy God of heaven and trying to get us to see the culture in which we live in today. Somebody says, "Well, you know, why'd you bring this up? Well, why was something that happened 2,000 years ago, why is that relevant in 2016? And I believe here are some of the reasons why. I want you to think about the idols that are in our culture today. And if you would just do a cursory look at some of these statements out of the book of Acts, you would see that Paul in his missionary journeys recognized the problem of idolatry. Look at it here in Acts chapter 17, verse 16. Paul went to Athens. And when he went there, what did Paul see? Here's Acts 17, verse 16. While Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him when he saw that the city was given over to idols. The city was given over to idols. When you go to Acts chapter 19 and Paul is in Ephesus, and you look at verses 26 through 28. Notice what Paul saw when he was in Ephesus. Moreover, you see and hear that not only at Ephesus, but throughout all Asia, Paul was persuaded and turned away many people, saying that they are not gods which are made with hands. So not only is this trade of ours in danger of falling into disrepute, but also the temple of the great goddess Diana may be despised and her magnificence destroyed, whom all Asia and the world worshipped. Watch this next verse. When they heard this, when they heard Paul speak out against idolatry, they were full of wrath. And you know what they cried out even more? Great is Diana of the Ephesians. Imagine that chant of several hundred thousand people. Great is Diana goddess of the Ephesians, as they worshiped and bowed down to that statue. When we go to 1 Thessalonians 1 and verse 9, we learn that Paul was thankful that some in Thessalonica had turned to God from idols. When you go to 1 John 5 and verse 21, John wrote as a father figure to younger folk, saying to them, keep yourselves from idols. And while we're here in the Revelation, turn back to chapter 9 and look with me at verse 20. Revelation 9 and 20. And here's what it says. But the rest of mankind who were not killed by these plagues did not repent of the work of their hands, that they should not worship demons and idols of gold, silver, brass, stone, and wood. Watch this next part. This is the most fascinating part. Which can neither see nor hear nor walk. An idol could neither see nor hear nor walk. But yet in Ephesus there were these thousands of people. Great is Diana, the goddess that we worship and serve. But they could neither see nor hear nor walk. When Paul went to Athens and he saw the city given over to idolatry, they could neither see nor hear nor walk. What is an idol? An idol is an image or a likeness, whether real or imaginary. It is an image of a heathen or a false god. Webster goes on to tell us that an idol is the object of our worship. Now I want you to look at these two things and focus on those for a moment. An idol is an image or a likeness. Real or unreal? And Webster tells us that it is one where we have an excessive devotion toward or an object of worship. But yet in the Revelation, it says they can neither see nor hear nor talk. Think of the contrast between that and God. God who can see every one of us. God who can hear us. A God who can talk. He's talking to us today through His Word. He's speaking to us. Think of the tremendous contrast that we see between God and idolatry. Somebody says, well, are there really any idols around today? I'm glad you asked that question, because this really gets to the meaning of what it means to us in 2016. Let's talk about some idols that might be around today. Let's look at this first one. Power. Power is an idol. Why would anybody want to be president of the United States? And the two candidates that are running are multi-millionaires. Well, certainly with a salary of about $400,000 a year, you're not doing it for the money to be president of the United States. Somebody says, well, these people want to serve the public. Really? How many of them do you see digging any ditches? Really? Would it not more be about power? Power is an idol. Number two, approval. Somebody says, if I can just get the approval of somebody else, certainly I will be loved and respected by the masses of people. You know, your approval can become an idol. What about this one? Independence. I am free from the obligations and the responsibilities of other people. I am, watch this, my own man. I am my own woman. I am independent. Independence can be an idol. What about achievement? Achievement says, I am recognized for my accomplishments. for my accolades, for my trophies, for my medals. Have you seen those lately? Achievement can become an idol. What about materialism? Well, that one goes without saying. We know, we talked about this last week, Money 101, that no man can serve two masters. He's either going to hate one and love the other, hold to the one and despise the other. He says you can't serve God and money. So we know that materialism easily an idol, especially in the United States of America. What about this one? Family. So how can family be an idol? Well, my children and my parents, they're happy with me, and that's all that really matters. Is it really? In Matthew chapter 10, did you know that Jesus went on to say, he that loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he that loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me? And some of us are so bent on pleasing the physical family that we forget to please the spiritual family. And family can become an idol in our lives. What about this one? Ideology. Well, I mentioned at the beginning today 9-1-1, 9-11. You ever thought about the symbolism of that? 9-11, and what do you call in an emergency? Am I wrong? Do you call 9-1-1? Shake your head. It won't fall off. Yeah, I promise you. Really, that's what we do in an emergency. What happened at 9-11? It was 9-1-1, 9/11, 9-1-1. I want to tell you what happened 9-1-1. It was the ideology of Islam imposing their will on New Testament Christianity. That's what it really happened. Because of this being referred to as a Christian nation, you had the forces of evil, which are Islam, and the followers of Islam who pay attention to Allah and Muhammad and follow that ideology, that became an idol. And a person's ideology can become an idol in their life. It was true with Hitler. It was his ideology and those who followed him. That can become an idol in a person's life. What about this one? Image. I want you to think about this one for a moment as a citizen of the United States of America. We have got this jaded picture that we have to be a certain way in order to be acceptable to other people. I know why they do this. It's called marketing. And you see it every time that you go to the grocery store. And when you get up to the checkout lane, and they make you wait there on purpose so that you'll think about buying some of that junk that surrounds that. Why is that candy right at the level where a three-year-old can get here? Mom, I want these Smarties. I'm not too smart, you know. It's marketing. But what you do is you see a lot of magazines. And those magazines have some of the most beautiful women in the world. I mean, they are beautiful. And you look at that magazine and you think, wow, look at her. And then you find out that she's been airbrushed 17 times just to get that photo on that magazine. She really don't look like that. As a matter of fact, if you knew what she really looked like, she wouldn't even be on that magazine. And that's the truth. It's makeup. And it's airbrushing. It's unreal. It doesn't exist. And we have this image in our head sometimes that we have to look a certain way in order to be accepted by our peers. And a lot of young people go through that body image problem, saying, well, if I'm not this, or I don't have that, or I don't have this on, I'm just not going to be accepted. Image can be an idol. It really can. All right, now let's do something with that. Let's do this. Since we're talking about God versus idols, I want to pose this question. How do we identify something that is fake from something that is real? We're going to be turning to Revelation 14, but I want to give you an illustration. True story of what happens in the U.S. Treasury Department and agents who work in U.S. Treasury. How do they spot? As a matter of fact, has anybody got a $100 bill I could use for an illustration here? Has anybody got one on them? Seriously. Richard, you You don't have one on you? Mark, you probably got several. If you can do this, this would really help out in an illustration here. If you've got one here, thank you so much, brother. Thank you so much. Now, here's what I want you to do.
Careful, that's only one guy.
Yeah, he lies about other things too. All right, I want you to look at this very, very closely. U.S. Treasury agents, here's what they do. They do not study counterfeit bills. They study the real bill. You know why? If they know everything about this bill right here, then when a counterfeit one comes up, they can spot it just like that. That's what they do. They don't study the fake. They don't study counterfeit bills. They study the original. I'm going to suggest to us... Oh, by the way, thanks for the illustration. By the way, that is... I'm sorry, let's put this back in the collection plate. Let's see it. All right, brother, here you go. I know you didn't want to let loose of that, and thank you. Okay, all right. I'm so sorry that didn't make it to the plate. But nonetheless, thank you for that. Thank you. Hey, how do we identify the fake from the real? Revelation 14, 1 through 5. Revelation 14, 1 through 5. I looked, and behold, a lamb standing on Mount Zion with 144,000 having his Father's name written on their foreheads. I heard a voice from heaven like the voice of many waters and like the voice of loud thunder. And I heard the sound of harpists playing their harps. They sang as it were a new song before the throne, before the four living creatures and the elders. And no one could learn that song except the 144,000, those who were redeemed from the earth. Watch for. These are the ones who were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. They are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever He goes. These were redeemed from among men, being first fruits to God and to the Lamb. And in their mouth was found no deceit, for they are without fault before the throne of God. Here's what I want you to see. How do we know the identity or identify the fake from the real? Is because verse 4 says in Revelation 14, we're called to follow the Lamb. And if we're following the Lamb, which is the original, then we're going to be able to spot the fake pretty quick. If we're following the Lamb. What happens when you follow the Lamb? What he says here in verse 4 and 5, you would be the first fruits. When's the last time you read 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 20? It talks about how those who follow Christ are the first fruits. Those who do what? Follow Jesus. Follow the Lamb. Follow the original. Secondly, he says in 14:5, something that I think is really, really fascinating. And in their mouth was found no deceit, for they are without fault before the throne of God. Here's what I want you to see in 14:5. They, those early Christians who were being persecuted and suffering, they would utter no allegiance to the Roman government. Being New Testament Christians, they would swear no oaths to them, no vows to them, no prayers to them, because they were following the Lamb and they were not giving allegiance to the beasts. So that brings us to a crescendo this morning, a climax in our message, and that is this. What is our devotion today? We gave that long list a few moments ago, 8 or 9 or 10 things. They're idols. They're idols. They're fake. They're phony. They're beasts. They're monsters. So what is our devotion today? You ready for this? It's the Godhead. And specifically, it goes all the way back to Exodus chapter 20. The original 10 commandments. When's the last time you read those? The first four are strictly vertical. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. You know what that says? Let me put it into 21st century language. Thou shalt have no other idols before me. You shouldn't make any graven images, blank, blank, blank. You shouldn't do any of these things. Why? Because Exodus 20 says our God is a jealous God. And He is. And doesn't God have a right to be a jealous God? Because God's the one who spoke the world into existence. Because God is the one who made us. Because God is the one who gave us Jesus. Nobody else gave us Jesus, but God did. That's why our devotion should be to God. God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit. Well, I made you promise, if you listen well, it would go quick. And it went really quick. I think it went faster after the $100 bill than before. Grab your songbooks. By the way, I guess I should go ahead and mention this. I'll be accepting tips after the message today. Idols are so real in our culture. I mean, if you go to Bowling Green, Kentucky, and you see EA Diddle Arena, you might be looking at an idol. If you see Houchen Smith Stadium, you could be looking at an idol. If you see Rupp Arena, you could be looking at an idol. On and on and on and on it goes. I wonder if Jesus or the Apostle Paul came back and he looked at some of our cities, he would say, that city's given over to idolatry. But as we pare it down, we've got to look at our own individual lives. Am I serving the God of heaven? And I'm not being distracted from my devotion to God by something else. Because if something else is in the way, I need to crucify it. I need to put it to death. I need to get rid of it today. I need to reach the watery grave of baptism to be a New Testament Christian. And if I am a Christian and I've got some distractions to my devotion, I need to remove those and make Him first and foremost in my life. We love you. We care about you. We're interested in you. And that's why we shared the message today. And so, Jason, let's stand and sing.